Blog Talk Radio.
Only it is Thursday night, 8:02. We're about 2 minutes late tonight, but hey, that's not a problem whatsoever. My name is James Jameson, also known as the guy who talks first. Across the table on the sofa with me tonight, as always, the man who puts the cross in crossbar, Mr. K. Ross Reed.
Good evening, sir. How are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good. We just finished eating. We just came in from
around
outside.
Around the 8:01 mark.
Yeah, we just came in from outside. Had a nice little barbecue in the backyard.
Fantastic, yeah. And thank you again to James and his lovely wife, Lisa, for having us over tonight.
Yeah.
Good times all around.
Good times indeed. Nate was a little upset towards the end there, but we're still not quite sure as to whether or not that's just because he was hungry or he just doesn't like you.
I'd like it to think you'd be the first one. You seem to be doing all right the first half hour I was here. I'm going to chalk it up to hunger.
All right, so we're going to chalk that one up to hunger. And, yeah, so this is Off the Crossbar Live, and we're going to talk hockey tonight. We're still not even really quite sure what we're going to go through.
Yeah, we've got a couple of issues on the back burner. No real pressing issues in today's episode, but I think we're going to have to... Definitely take a look at this Kovalev situation. He says he wants to come back. He says he's got some tryouts. That would be interesting to see. I have a feeling we're going to dig into the PK Subban situation just a little bit. We got off on a little bit of a tangent there last week.
That one just kept going.
And you know what? It's still going this week. Of course, still not under contract at all. We're going to take a look at how the collective bargaining agreement, has actually impacted the game. I don't really want to get into the nuts and bolts. We've heard it over and over again. If you're any kind of hockey fan at all the sports media outlets have been beating this thing to death, talking about crunching numbers. You have to be a mathematician to be a hockey fan this offseason. So we're going to take a look at sort of the other effects of what this is doing to our game.
All that and more, but right now it is time to go Off the Crossbar.
It's a long lead-in with the go. I like that. Well, wait till I find the button, and there it is.
I had the button. I was just waiting for the theme song to kind of cut out there. So while I sit here and attempt to fix K-Ross's laptop, which is currently not connecting to my internet connection.
The perils of being your own stat monkey.
Yeah, I know. You threw an article up there today. Let's talk about that. Let's just get it out of the way right off the bat here.
Well,
as you are... a self-proclaimed business major.
They proclaimed that for you at the end of those 4 years. But yeah,
do they?
Right. Yeah, okay. I've got the paper that proves it.
Okay,
yeah.
Just making sure. I wasn't sure, but okay. So you are a business major.
Yes, sir.
And you've dealt with the whole dealings of money and this.
The contract negotiations, the percentage points here, there, and all over the place.
Yeah. So. As we heard, and as it's been widely reported, NHL none too pleased with the latest offer from the players and the PA, and they say we are still there's still a wide gap.
I believe the exact terminology was worlds apart.
Worlds apart, which is pretty crazy.
Heavy language.
Especially considering the offer that the players did put forth. As you said, we're not going to get into any kind of real specifics on the deal or anything like that. If you want to go read those, you can go check out any sports website, newspaper, whatever you want. They'll have at least the closest thing to a full breakdown of that.
If you're having any trouble getting to sleep tonight after you turn off the show, I highly recommend you go over and review both of those proposals. 10 minutes, you'll be out.
Yeah, not a problem in that. But considering what the players did offer, I'm surprised with the use of worlds apart.
It seemed as if, and again, it seems as if from my perspective, The players have a little more leniency in their game plan. I felt like they were willing to wiggle a little bit more from their ideal. And it appears that the commissioner and the league are more than willing to play hardball.
Yeah. And, you know, obviously, if you watch any kind of sports updates here and there, you'll get the analysis here and there. And I really like the one that I forget who it was. I believe it was Aaron Ward on TSN.
Yeah.
Who said that...
my mom's favorite.
I love Aaron Ward.
Mom loves Aaron Ward.
He's an awesome dude.
Yeah, I like him a lot.
And when he came out and said, you look at the two proposals and the NHL looks at the players and says, okay, the onus is on you guys to make sure everything works properly.
Right.
Whereas the players kind of came back and said, you know what? We're all in this together. Like, you know, we'll take some sacrifices here, but at the same time, you guys need to have some kind of responsibility in all of this.
Oh, absolutely.
And like, let's try and go a give and take route. And I know the NHL coming back, flat out rejecting that, it leaves not very much optimism.
No, it really doesn't. I mean, 30 days away from the expiry of the current collective bargaining agreement, we really just don't have any sort of framework in place, and it really doesn't look like this is going to work out very well.
No, I would be shocked if something gets done by the 15th, and partially because nothing is scheduled again until next Wednesday.
Yeah.
That's a full week almost. They gave their proposal on Tuesday, and the NHL came back on Wednesday, and now there's nothing scheduled again for Bettman and Donald Fehr to get face-to-face again up until Wednesday of next week. That is a full 7 days in between.
And is that not ridiculous? I mean,
yes.
What is it exactly that the NHLPA director and the commissioner of hockey have to do that is more important than making sure there is hockey? What else are they working on? What is this week going towards? And having seen this deadline coming for a long, long time, why are we at this point now? And that's one thing that always gets me with these negotiations is in January and February of this year, we were hearing this could be an issue in the summertime. You know, these two sides are going to come into the negotiating table very far apart, and there's going to be some difficulty in finding that middle ground. If we knew this in February, why are we dealing with this now? Is it not in everybody's best interest to play hockey? Whether you're an owner, a player, hell, if you're a mascot or a hot dog vendor, it is in your best interest for there to be hockey.
Oh, for sure.
Why is this happening now?
Yeah, and that's really what boggles my mind about all this, because as you brought up in your article, hockey was never as popular as it was in the early 90s.
You're right, yeah.
And despite the fact that they still had a season in 95, that break that they took off of the Rangers winning the Stanley Cup was the worst thing that they did.
Oh,
because at the same time, all of that, and like I brought it up last week, when you have a hockey mecca like New York really, like, with a fan base that's really going, it's a lot easier for the rest of the country to follow suit.
Oh, it really is.
It's like when something is big in LA and when something is big in New York, it's a lot easier for the rest of the United States to really get in on it. And the problem that the NHL missed in 94-95, and I may be completely off on this, but if I'm not mistaken, it was also right around the same time that the Knicks were right on the cusp of trying to get to that NBA championship.
Mm-hmm.
And so NHL kind of took a back seat to, oh man, the Knicks this year, man, they got it.
Yeah.
It didn't matter what the Rangers were doing at that point. It didn't matter that the Devils won the Stanley Cup that year.
Well, and that's it. I mean, New York City is the kind of place that has an attention span like a sand flea. I mean, it's if you have your spotlight and lose it, it's very difficult to get back. It's very difficult to get in the first place. But Mark Messier and the Rangers had set that city on fire. the previous year.
Oh, yeah.
That was as good a situation, as you mentioned, as the National Hockey League could hope for in terms of its American markets. I mean, or what you have this year, where it's either L.A. or New York. When one of those teams does well, the league will do well. But now we're left, as you said, I mean, if you look at the results after 94, the league was never really the same. And now we're staring down the barrel of yet another work stoppage, this time the third in the last, what has it been, 17 years?
Yeah.
That's too much. That's crazy to think that this can happen in this industry. I mean, it makes sense when you're talking about teachers' unions or construction crews or regular union work, where we're talking about whether or not people are making it up to a certain standard of living. We all know that there's going to be hockey. We all know it will get back on track again at some point soon.
Eventually, yeah.
So it's really just a matter of who's going to make the concessions. I think both sides of this are aware that the concessions are going to need to be made, and quite serious ones from the two ideals moving inward. But we all know it's going to happen. I think it's got to just be time to, you know, put on your construction hat and go to work.
Yeah, and, you know, I believe you ended your little article there with saying, like, okay, you know what? Lock the damn door.
Yeah.
Everybody sit your ass down. And just figure it out.
Oh, absolutely.
Because there's clearly a deal that's going to work for everybody in this situation. And how come when, oh, well, we don't like what they proposed here, so why don't you have a counteroffer? Like, why don't you have something ready? Like, none of this garbage of an entire week.
Yeah, I'll get back to you in a week. And this is ridiculous because
the NHL is not in the situation that the NFL was in.
If the
owners want to take a break in the NFL and say, all right, guys, you got to come to us. Yeah, those players really have to go to it. And the owners know that they can take that break. Hell, the players know that they can take that break, because at the end of the day, the NFL could lose a month and a half, 2 months. They could make a season 6 games. They're still going to sell out every single game.
Yeah.
They're still going to get millions upon millions of people that watch.
And that's really the difference, is the momentum of the game. Hockey doesn't have the kind of momentum that it can just throw it into neutral and coast for a little while.
No.
It needs to continually build upon itself. It needs to continue to push the envelope. And you just can't do that when the players are not playing hockey. You're absolutely right. If you're the NFL, you can afford that. It's not good for the game.
No, it's not good,
but
they were in a situation where they could have still triumphed as a league. They
exactly.
still have been the number one league in, like, the world.
Oh, absolutely.
Much. You know, baseball could take half a season off, and people would still go back.
Yeah, they would.
The Yankees would still sell out. The Red Sox. Obviously, you know, the Royals might still have trouble getting people. I don't know how the Miami team is doing this year in terms of attendance, because, hell, the Marlins weren't getting nobody to those games.
But they used so many pastel colors in their new arena.
But, you know, like, baseball would still be able to survive. Like, you know, the NBA.
Yeah.
But, you know, even the NBA. We were lucky to get the fans back.
And hockey is not that strong in a lot of markets. I mean, at the end of the day, hockey is absolutely a distant fourth in the North American sports landscape. We would like to think it's more because you and I really enjoy the game and because we live in a place where it's the only game in town. But you're not.
Well, no, like I'm totally realistic. And obviously if hockey is only played up here in Canada, yeah, fine. Who cares? They can take 6 months off for all anybody up here cares. The second hockey's back, you know the Habs, you know the Leafs, and you know every other team in Canada outside of the Ottawa Senators is going to sell out.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. They will.
But your markets like Columbus, if there's a lockout, and a considerable lockout, with Rick Nash leaving and just the terrible, terrible history of the Columbus Blue Jackets, that team is not going to be able to hold on.
And could you imagine what's going to happen in Phoenix after finally locking down the final $20 million to keep the team in town? Now you're missing even a quarter of a season.
Yeah.
A quarter season's worth of revenues is enough to sink this team.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, it's not even close.
Like, with the financial situation of too many teams in the league being shaky at best.
Yeah.
This is the last thing that the owners should be looking towards. Like, these guys should be hell-bent on getting a deal right away.
And I just, for the life of me, can't understand why they are not. And I understand that negotiations can be very complex and that negotiations can be very difficult to get through. But you really just need to take a logical perspective on this and understand that this will not be the death of professional hockey.
No.
Therefore, everybody needs to just start acting like grown-ups. Like you said, like I said in my article, get into a boardroom, order a pizza, lock the door, and don't come out until you've settled this like grown-ups.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, just come to a conclusion and get this dealt with, because this is crazy.
Oh, for sure.
It's one thing for billionaire owners to miss out on a little bit of revenue. It's one thing for millionaire players to miss out on a little bit of salary. But you're crippling an industry. I mean, not only are you neglecting your fan base, who are fickle at best in some of these hockey markets and some of these NHL markets, but you're also looking at an entire industry. You've got guys like me and you, who talk about this game, who are trying to build themselves a career within this game. Like, you talk about peanut vendors, you talk about t-shirt sales places, you talk about the guys that are hawking jerseys and foam fingers, sports bars, restaurants near arenas, public transit, taxis. This is an industry unto itself.
Yeah.
And yes, the disagreement is occurring between the two bigger players, but there is a huge trickle-down effect here that really, when you start to pull the infrastructure from out underneath of hockey in some of these cities, you're going to be left with devastating results.
Yeah, and in cases like this, I really like to use – I love using a quote from one of my favorite comedians of all time, Louis Black.
Yeah.
He uses it when it was in one of his specials a while back talking about politics. But it's the time where both sides just need to sit down and figure out what the hell reality is.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's really what both sides need to do. You know, I will take a personal standpoint on this one, and I like to think that the players made the right move on this one, and the owners are just being kind of jerks right now.
It looks that way, yeah. From the outside right now, it definitely looks that way.
And you know what? If the players were making that real public relations kind of pitch, hey, they won it in my book right now.
Absolutely.
They totally came out and said,
well, they explained themselves.
Yeah. Like, we just want to get this done.
Yeah.
Like, that's the feeling that I got from the players. They're just, we want to get this done. Like,
We
just want to play hockey. We're willing to take considerably less money. Just, we want to get all this over with. Just let us play. But don't put all of the onus on us for your mistakes.
Oh, absolutely. And that's just the thing. I mean, these players, they didn't decide to expand the league. These players didn't negotiate the broadcast contracts. I mean, they showed up and played the game.
Yeah.
The only financial inkling they have is towards their own contract status.
Yeah. And you can't blame a guy.
And what's wrong with that?
No. And, you know, it's like everybody gets on Scott Gomez's case for having the contract that he is. You can't blame him for saying, yeah, I'll totally take $12 million.
Oh, of course not. Of course
like,
not. And
that is not on the players to stop that.
No, it's not. But you know what? I don't even think that player, and we've had this discussion before, I think, but I'm one of the few people who just doesn't believe that most pro athletes are overpaid. I don't buy that theory. Because people say, oh, he plays a game for a living. You know, he's having fun. He's not really working that hard.
Yeah.
Okay, that's fair. But if you invent a product one day and then license that patent out to a company, if I invent the yo-yo and then sell it to Wham-O Toys and I collect 50 cents on every yo-yo that's sold from now until eternity and I get wealthy, I didn't do much work. How did I earn that money any more so than a pro athlete?
Oh, yeah,
the
no.
fact of the matter is,
no, no, I'm...
when you have a skill or a marketable anything, a product, an opinion like you and I have, sometimes you can turn that into money. And if you can generate revenue with it, you're entitled to a percentage of that revenue.
Yeah, for sure. And based on all of the revenue, yeah, these guys make exactly pretty much what they're worth on this point. Like, you know, Rick Nash brings in so much revenue.
Yeah, exactly.
So he should be entitled to X amount of the revenue that comes in. And if you actually look at how much money is made, the players might even kind of technically be considered underpaid for how much money that these guys make, because they only get a certain percentage of hockey-related revenue.
Exactly.
There's still a ridiculous amount of revenue outside of that, and that's when you get into a real business major kind of thing going on there.
Well, that's where it becomes an industry.
Yeah.
As opposed to a product.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I mean, hockey is the product. Yeah, that's what we're tuning in for. But there are millions of people making money off this.
Oh, for sure.
And right now, in the face of a lockout, there are millions of people who stand to lose significant money because of this. And that's kind of what gets me. That's one of the little things about the whole situation that really annoys me, that kind of grinds my gears a little bit.
Yeah, and, you know, I really honestly would have thought that after 2005, there wouldn't be this childish... That's personally how I feel, like, you know, reading some of Bettman's comments and seeing him in front of the microphone and him just reporting back on, you know, what the Board of Governors and all them have to say on different things like that. Like, I find, like, a lot of it just seems childish and immature and just like, hey, you know what?
It does.
Like, yeah, just grow up. Everybody go to work and get it done. You have 30 days. There is not a chance in hell that in 30 days from today that if the two of you just sat down in a room, you couldn't figure it out. Because that's ultimately how the last one was figured out.
Oh, you're completely right.
Gary Bettman and Bob Goodnow were just too, like, pinheaded with each other that they couldn't get a damn thing done. So Bill Daly and whatever that dude's name was there that was under Goodnow, well, they got together with a couple guys from the PA, like Trevor Linden, and I believe Brendan Shanahan was a big driving factor.
Yeah, he was
well,
back then, yeah.
And just a number of key NHL guys with the, like, second rung of higher-ups in the NHL, and the guys just sat down and said, all right, well, what do you guys want? Because this is what we want. And that's all it took.
And
an open dialogue.
And wouldn't it be nice if it was that simple?
And it is.
To be honest with you, I guess in hindsight now, rather foolishly predicted last summer on Seth Kamen's radio show here on Back Sports Page that this couldn't happen. That this just would not happen. He asked me flat out, the collective bargaining agreement is going to end. Will there be a lockout? And my answer without hesitation at that point was a flat no.
Well, no, because you think they'd be stupid to let it go that
exactly.
far.
Exactly. These guys learned their lesson. The lockout in 94 just about killed all the forward momentum that the game of hockey had. The one in 05 damn near did the league in. I mean, that was crazy, trying to take an entire season away from hockey. I mean, you had to double up your draft. You had this whole mess with Crosby coming in and Pittsburgh having three balls in the lottery, and all of a sudden guys are playing in Europe, and they realize how viable this is. So now the KHL exists as a direct result, in my opinion, from the 05 lockout. That's the only reason that business people in Russia have their eyes open to the fact that, you know what? We could probably sustain this level of hockey over here. People are paying to see it. We can afford to pay these guys NHL salaries.
And now even more so in plenty of cases.
Well, and that's it. Yeah, depending on the guy. I mean, like we always go back to A-Rad, but that guy's making crazy money right now. He's making NHL superstar money to
and
play.
And he would
the
never
KHL.
Make that over here.
Never. Never. So,
and if I'm not mistaken, it's also tax-free over there.
I didn't know that.
I'm not 100%, but I'm thinking something has to do with the taxes as well. So even if you get an offer that is comparable, it actually works out more over there because there's something with the taxes.
Well, there you go. And I mean,
you're living in Russia.
This is the nest of problems that the NHL has created. And you would think, I would think that somebody, and you know what, everybody knocks Gary Bettman. I have given him credit in the past for good decisions he has made. He's an intelligent man. I would think that he would be smart enough to avoid this. And barring something exceptional that I have not heard about, it just doesn't look like he is. It's crazy.
Yeah. Like, I've never made a secret on this show whatsoever that I've even gone as far as saying I'm a fan of Gary Bettman.
Yeah, I think he's been good for the game in the time he's been commissioner, and a lot of people will give me heat for that.
Yeah, no, very much, especially here in this country.
Oh, yeah.
Especially here in this country. Like, hell, even in this province, there are not many a fan of Mr. Bettman,
no,
I would say.
No, that's true.
But I've stated countless times that, yeah, you know what? He has done what his job was to grow the game of hockey.
Yeah.
And he has done so more than I ever would have thought possible in the United States.
Absolutely. And definitely some growing pains along the way. I don't mean to say that the man's been perfect or a saint, but his net effect has been positive.
Yeah. Like, there's obviously been some negatives in there here and there, you know, put in the crease.
Yeah, that. Oh yeah, that was an issue.
But all in all, big fan of what has transpired since he's taken over office, let's call it. But this
situation stands to sour that reputation,
yeah.
Even in my eyes.
Yeah, no.
Even in my eyes.
Something about this right now really just kind of takes all of that out and just goes, dude, come on.
Yep.
Like, the NHL should be the powerhouse for hockey in the entire world.
Oh, bar none. Yeah, absolutely.
And, like, you know, this is obviously just my own personal feeling on this one, but the fact that the KHL has climbed to where it is in terms of, like, just global competitiveness.
Yeah, yeah.
And just overall, like, hey, you know what? Like, maybe I'll just go play over in Russia. Like, screw you guys.
Well,
over
that's
here.
It. It
the
becomes
fact
a second option so
happened,
quickly.
Yeah. Like, that league has been around for what seems less than 10 years.
2008.
Yeah.
So I mean, less than five years.
Less than 5 years. Jeez, yeah. So that's like a baby league over there. And those guys are already poaching superstars from the NHL.
That's crazy.
Or potential superstars.
Potential, yeah.
From the NHL. You know, those guys are given all kinds of problems to this league here in North America. And they're 4 years old.
And it's just because the NHL can't get its act together. It has nothing to do with the fact that the KHL, in my opinion, has built an exceptionally competitive, like, state-of-the-art experience for their players. I mean, they have issues, obviously, with transportation. They've had some issues. They have issues with players' checks bouncing. They have issues with organized crime influence. And yet they're still able to take players from what is supposed to be the greatest league on the planet.
Yeah. And
it blows my mind.
Like, that's when, especially now, because, like I said, when L.A. or New York is good, your league is never going to be as strong.
You're right.
L.A. was fantastic this year in the playoffs. There was so much L.A. love going on.
Oh, yeah.
And not just from, you know, the casual hockey fan, but we're talking people who know nothing about this sport.
Yep.
You know, celebrities who probably watch 2 hockey games every 3 years. We're on Twitter going, hey, man, how about them L.A. Kings?
Yeah.
Like, dude, well, you know, you've got legitimate hockey fans like Alyssa Milano. And, you know, if you're a fan of nerd culture, as I am, Will Wheaton, mm-hmm. who was on Star Trek back in the day. You know, real King fans that are exploding out. And all of their followers are getting introduced to the world of the L.A. Kings. The fact that Pancakes became so big.
Oh, Dustin Penner.
Like, that just goes to show you how crazy it was. Like, Kobe was in with the Kings going like, hey, yeah, man, let's bring a championship to L.A.
Yep.
You know, you had David Beckham and Posh Spice getting in on the L.A. Kings. Like, this was momentum that you wanted to carry forward. You wanted to carry that Hollywood style with the L.A. Kings. Coming out of these playoffs going, all right, can the Kings do it again?
That's the kind of publicity
that was your tagline coming into this season.
Yep.
Can the Kings do it again? And you base your entire season off of that?
man, you know you're going to get ratings. You know you're going to get the casual fan in there. Because, yeah, you want to tell somebody, hey, look, the Kings are playing on TV. Maybe you'll see this guy. Maybe you'll see this celebrity.
That's it.
And who knows?
And instead of roping in the casual fan, we're left in a situation where the NHL, at best, will keep the fans they have. And we'll probably lose some.
This would have been the situation.
And this is terrible.
Yeah, this would have been a situation where you go, all right, fine, you know what? Just extend the current one for one more year.
Yeah.
And we will have meetings every day.
Yeah.
To try and finalize something going forward that is the best possible option for both sides.
Yep.
You know, and I'm not saying what the players offered this round was the best possible option.
But it was a good starting point.
But I like their idea of going... I believe they compared their offer more to Major League Baseball, whereas the NHL was comparing themselves more to the NFL and the NBA, where they said, okay, we're going to have hard caps here, this,
yeah.
Like, you know, caps on player salary and all this kind of stuff. Whereas the players were like, well, let's kind of get away from all of that and worry about just sustaining a league.
Yeah,
where
absolutely.
Where we can help the Blue Jackets or help... You know, the Coyotes and help all of these teams that are in need. You know, let's give them extra draft picks. And I like that idea of everybody sitting down and just going, okay, what does the game need?
Yep.
Then what do both sides want? Figure out something that'll work for those three, but in that order. Figure out what's best for the game first and then go.
Absolutely.
That's what needs. So it would have been a best case scenario. You extend that CBA into this year, just one more year, and then you just lock Bettman and Donald Fehr in a room and say, you assholes, don't come out.
Oh, yeah.
Until you both have your names on a piece of paper and everyone's cool with it.
And what it really boils down to is just an opinion of suck it up. You have one job, and that is to keep hockey moving.
Yeah.
If hockey stops, you fail.
Yeah.
And you saw this coming. Get in the damn room and make hockey start again. I hate to oversimplify it, but it needs to be oversimplified because
for sure.
It is purely overcomplicated at this point.
And you know what? Like, I would go as far as saying 2005 to 2012, that's not a long time.
No.
And the fact that you are having two lockouts in 7 years, I'm sorry, but... You'd have to look at Bettman at that point and say, you know what? Maybe you just aren't the right guy.
Well, maybe
here.
Your window is closed.
Yeah. Because, hey, last time when things didn't go the right way, they got rid of Goodenow. They got rid of the entire PA.
Yeah.
And started from scratch. If it doesn't work this time around, and if it's being this complicated, and it's a brand new PA...
You've got to, it's the process of deduction
at that point, yeah. You know what? If there's only so many people in a room and everybody else is left and you're the only one there.
You're probably the problem. Yeah.
You're the problem at that point. And you have to look at Bettman and you have to look at Bill Daly and say, okay, are these guys really what's good for the game right now?
I completely agree with you. I really do.
And it just really hurts right now.
Well,
especially after hearing what the players came out with, I was like, okay, you know what? This sounds like something that they could
promise.
Yeah. Like they could sit down and work on this. But then to come out and say, oh, hell no. Like,
yeah, ridiculous.
Yeah, like we're from Mars, they're from Venus kind of thing. Like, nah, dude. That was.
It's too much.
That put a sour taste in my mouth.
But you know what? We can go on. About
we can go on this
the
forever.
Complexities of it and how much we dislike it forever. Let's have a little bit of fun with it. We'll take a little bit of a theme from my own piece, which everybody listening right now should go check out at www.offthecrossbar.com. Adam would normally chip in and let you know it's Off the Crossbar with a K.
Yeah.
And up on the front page, I've got a piece that sort of highlights the lies I've told. In very much the same as a lot of people have asked me, what are my thoughts on the collective bargaining agreement? And I always end up talking about what we've just talked about. The nuts and bolts of it, just a little bit, sort of who I think is in the wrong, who I think is in the right. If you really want to know what I think about collective bargaining agreement negotiations, you should check out this article. The basic gist of it is, I find them damn annoying.
Yeah.
Not because of any particular insight. I just don't think that I should be talking about contract negotiations when I talk about the game I love.
Yeah.
And this potential for lockout, as it remains right now, annoys me in a couple of different ways, simply as a fan. And the first of those is that I don't like that it messes up all the stats.
Yeah.
I mean, when you look at
1994-95,
yeah, how do I know who's really, like, Jaromir Jagr wins a scoring title with 70 points? Well, that's cool, but really, like, he was on pace for what would have been 120 to 125 points that year.
Yeah.
I would much rather see that.
Yeah.
And then you get into things like, oh, this guy was a, you know, 15-time All-Star over the course of his career. But if there's a year missing, what did he miss?
Yeah.
You know, can Steven Stamkos score back-to-back 60-goal seasons? I mean, that is a feat. If he only gets two-thirds of a season or even three-quarters of a season this year, we'll never know.
Yeah. No, and...
And it robs the fans of those experiences. You know, Martin Brodeur has so many years in a row with 30-plus wins. And all of these numbers become fudged. The integrity of the game is lost because of paperwork.
Yeah.
All of these great achievements on the ice, all of these sort of these stats that guys like you and I really we like looking at. We like knowing what guy did what, how many years in a row. It gives us a little bit of perspective on the game. And by missing this, it skews that perspective. Unless you were alive to watch all of the 48 games of the 94-95 season for any given team, you will never really be able to look at teams that existed then and compare them accurately. How good were the Devils when they won the Cup in 94-95? We're not really sure.
Yeah, and you know, you even brought that up in the, even the Stanley Cup is tainted.
And it is.
It is. And you brought up Martin Brodeur, and I can't remember if you actually brought him up in this one.
I did,
but
yeah.
Brodeur plays, or let's take Brodeur out of the thing here because he's older now and doesn't play nearly as much. But you look at a guy like Mika Kiprusoff who plays 78 games in a regular season.
Yeah, exactly.
Over the course of 49 games, dude could easily play those 49 games and still have more than enough to carry a team to the Stanley Cup final.
And that's exactly it. But if I'm the Los Angeles Kings and I meet those Calgary Flames in the playoffs, I've got a team that's built around youth and tenacity that is designed specifically to hold up over the course of 82 games. So I've got youth in net. And Jonathan Quick last year proved himself to be one of the absolute elite netminders in the league. And yet, if we play two-thirds of a season last year, the Kings don't even make the playoffs.
Yep.
Let alone win the Stanley Cup. And the point I made about Martin Brodeur is sort of in the opposite direction, being that during this year's playoff run, he turned 40 years old and just came up short of another Stanley Cup. Now, he played 59 games in the regular season. If he only plays 30 because it's half a season, he could easily have enough gas in the tank to stand on his head and steal the Stanley Cup.
Yep.
If you don't play 82 games in a hockey season plus the Stanley Cup playoffs, you're robbing a lot of people of opportunities that they have been specifically building their team towards.
Oh, yeah.
You taint the Stanley Cup.
Depth,
you taint.
Depth gets almost thrown out the window.
Oh, forget about it.
Because injuries aren't going to be as big an issue.
Exactly. And then you have, again, you bring in a rookie who figures to be, you bring in Nail Yakupov this year because he's ready to make the jump. But you figure he needs 82 games of regular season experience before he's ready for the playoffs. So instead, he gets half a season's experience and goes into the playoffs and gets hurt.
Yeah.
Now what? Now you've changed the outcome of a franchise for the next 5 years. You've changed the outlook of a player's career. I mean, there's just too many variables. Hockey is designed, and all professional sports, the teams are built to hold up to specific schedules. And if you don't know what that schedule is, the outcome of that season is simply not relevant. I think I made the comparison like drag racing pickup. It's cool and it's interesting to watch, but you're not really getting a measure of what they're built to do.
Yep.
It's nice to watch hockey teams play out a 42-45 game regular season and compete for Stanley Cup. But at the end of the year, you don't really have the best hockey team winning the championship. Mm-hmm. And it's not like a pickup. Cool, I'll watch it. But the first truck to the finish line is not the fastest vehicle here. There's probably a Corvette in the parking lot that could smoke it. We're just looking at doing what we can with what
that's kind of amateur. If you look at last NHL season and you cut that thing in half and say, all right, let's play the playoffs today.
Mikko Koivu wins the Hart. Minnesota Wild win the President's Trophy. And the LA Kings don't make the playoffs.
Yeah. Minnesota's in there as the top seed. Like, it's a very different landscape. Hell, Toronto's in the playoffs.
Toronto's in. You know what? Depending on where you cut it, Montreal had just fallen out.
Yeah.
Round about Christmas time. That's nuts.
And it's a very different landscape. Buffalo's finished last place in the league almost.
Yep. And I mean, that's why these teams are built to hold up to this schedule. It's fake. There's no other way to put it. It's a pseudo season. If you do it any other way. When I look back, the scoring plus the minus, the 94-95.
Like that,